And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
Our church is packed, packed with refugees speaking a different language. It is quite a challenge for the locals. How do you teach people about our faith when they don't know the language at all? Asked the Reverend Hugo Gevers, pastor at Trinity Lutheran Church in Leipzig in Germany. It's a big, big problem. Now Gevers has an important new tool for sharing the good news with his Iranian immigrant parishioners. Luther's Small Catechism, translated and published in the Farsi language by the Lutheran Heritage Foundation, the LHF. The Farsi Small Catechism is LHF's 80th translation of this cornerstone of the Lutheran faith, and it's easy to see why Martin Luther's little book continues to be the key to opening scripture. For many new Christians, the Bible's hundreds of pages can seem overwhelming, said LHF Executive Director the Reverend Matthew Heiss. Like the Ethiopian eunuch, they ask, what does this mean? The Catechism boils down the Scripture's key teachings, mankind's sinful state, God's love and grace, the life of a Christian, in a way that's easily understandable for a new believer. The need for Farsi teaching materials has been overwhelming for the LCMS's partner church in Germany, the Independent Evangelical Lutheran Church, or SELC, where tens of thousands of Iranian asylum seekers have poured into the country. Over the past year, Gevers has baptized more new believers than he had in the previous 9 years combined. Almost all of those baptized have been Iranians and Afghans seeking political asylum. We are in a situation exactly as when Martin Luther wrote the Catechism back in 1529, Gevers said. Just as in Luther's day, we have a lot of people being baptized in various other than SELC churches and going to Holy Communion, but they don't even know what they're receiving. We need the Catechism to work with the Iranian people, to give them the basic knowledge of the Bible and the Christian faith in a nutshell. Of course, whether the refugees are sincere in their faith or simply trying to attain political asylum is a question that often arises. We know that there are some who are spying on us, Gevers, but we cannot allow this distrust to influence the way we work with them. We are not trusting in human strength, but in God's message, which is what changes the heart. So if he is a spy or a staunch Muslim, then he needs a message just as much as I do. The cover of the Farsi Small Catechism reflects his philosophy. The illustration shows a man sowing the seed, Gevers explained. It's very fitting to the situation because we are sowing and sowing and sowing, but God is making the seed grow. So it is with this catechism. We are sowing the seeds of biblical teaching. Though the 6,000 copies LHF published are being primarily distributed in Germany, there are also significant Farsi-speaking populations in the United States, Denmark and Scandinavia, where the catechisms also will be shared. As with all of LHF's books, the Farsi Small Catechism is available free of charge to the pastors, churches and individuals who need them. We also shouldn't underestimate how this message is reaching into Iran. Although Iran is over 99% Muslim, we know there is growing underground Christian church there. I wouldn't be surprised if some of these catechisms make their way to the underground church as some of the refugees return to Iran. What a miracle it's been to see this simple but profound little book shine the light of Jesus Christ into the darkest corners of Islam. Christians who fled their homes when ISIS took control of large swathes of Iraq have revealed the sickening torture of those who were left behind, which were forced to endure. The jihadists gave Christians four options: leave, convert to Islam, pay a religious tax, or die. Now one Christian named Isam has revealed how his brother-in-law was crucified following 5 hours of torture. ISIS told him that if he loved Jesus that much, he would die like Jesus. Speaking to charity ADF International, he said, "My wife's brother was crucified by Daesh. He was crucified and tortured in front of his wife and children, who were forced to watch. They told him that he loved Jesus that much, he would die like Jesus. ISIS then cut him and shot him before leaving him to die on a cross. The victim's wife and children are now safe in Sweden, but in a further blow, the wife has been diagnosed with cancer." The UN condemned Daesh for committing genocide against the Yazidis in Iraq in June, but is yet to rule on the terror group's actions against Christians. Isam, a father of three from Karakosh, said there have been reports of ISIS abducting Christian girls to become sex slaves. At least two more of his wife's relatives were unable to escape, with fears one man may have been killed and a female relative forced to live with the jihadists. He said, "We heard of 12 Christian girls who were with Daesh. There may be more. Our bishop told people not to tell if they lose the girls. It's a shame on the family." The Christian population of Iraq has been decimated from 2 million in 2003 to just 180,000 today. There have been repeated reports of ISIS crucifying and using both Iraqis and Syrians as sex slaves as they continue their sick campaign. The Luther Bible of the German Bible Society, Stuttgart, has been published online at bibleserver.com. According to the editors, the text of the Lutheran Bible has become more accurate and understandable and is more orientated on the powerful language of Martin Luther. ERF Medien offers Bible Server in cooperation with the German Bible Society and other Bible societies and publishers. Bible Server currently serves and offers 47 translations in 21 different languages. Since it was offered in 2002, the 1984 Luther Bible has been used by 7 million people. A Filipino cardinal has condemned as terrorism a bomb explosion outside a Catholic church in the southern Philippines, as clergy in the capital warned they could cancel masses because of heightened threat of attacks. Cardinal Orlando Cavido of Cotabato was speaking after at least three people were injured in a bomb attack, which took place as mass-goers were leaving Our Lady of Hope Church on Sunday, the 27th of November, the first Sunday of Advent. The cardinal said the bombing in the town of Esperanza in the southern province of Sultan Kudarat was made worse because of the sacredness of the place, the sacredness of the day, and the sacredness of the event that had just taken place. The cardinal described the bombing as an attack on human lives and an attack on freedom to worship, and urged the security forces to bring those responsible to justice. Superintendent Romeo Galgo, a regional spokesman, said intelligence officials believe the homemade device was intended to divert attention from the army's military offences against the Mauti group, which has pledged allegiance to Islamic State. Police and military checkpoints have been set up around the province. The following day, in the capital, Manila, a bomb was found near the U.S. Embassy and detonated safely, prompting police to erect checkpoints around Manila to prevent further attacks. The church, for practical purposes, will be more than willing to suspend any liturgical activity if there are threats to the safety of churchgoers, said Father Jerome Cesolano of the Public Affairs Committee of the Catholic Bishops' Conference. Police said another group that has claimed allegiance to the Islamic State was believed to have been behind the foiled bombing. In August, a missionary priest involved in interfaith dialogue told the Catholic Charity Aid to the Church in Need that Christians were living in fear, terrified to speak out, and leaving the region because of the more violent form of Islam that was spreading there. Police have appealed for information after a life-size baby Jesus doll was stolen from a nativity display. The doll was taken from the scene outside St. John's Kirk in St. John's Place, Perth, at around 11:30 p.m. on Monday. Police say three young boys were seen acting suspiciously at the time and were last spotted near St. John's Street. The boys were wearing black clothing and two of them were carrying rucksacks. Anyone who is in the area at the time and can help officers with inquiries is offered to contact Police Scotland. The Supreme Court in the USA will decide whether some of the nation's largest health providers can rely on their church affiliations to avoid complying with federal laws covering pension benefits for workers. The justices agreed last week to take up cases involving three non-profit hospital systems being sued for underfunding their employee pension plans. Lower courts ruled against the hospitals, Dignity Health, Advocate Healthcare Network, and St. Peter's Healthcare System, saying their pensions do not qualify as church plans exempt from the law. That could force them and other hospitals to spend billions to make up funding shortfalls. The hospitals argue that several federal agencies for years have assured them that they are, in fact, exempt. Workers have filed dozens of similar lawsuits over pension management across the country against hospitals affiliated with religious groups. The lawsuits argue that the hospitals are shirking legal safeguards that could mean losses of retirement benefits for tens of thousands of workers. Pension plans must be fully funded and insured under federal law, but Congress carved out narrow exemptions for churches and other religious organizations. In the three cases taken up Tuesday, appeals courts in San Francisco, Chicago, and Philadelphia have all ruled that the exemption applies only to plans that were established by a church. The hospitals claim the law also exempts plans associated with or controlled by a church, whether or not a church in itself created the plan. The Supreme Court in September temporarily blocked the ruling against Dignity Health from taking effect while justices decided whether to review the case. Workers suing the hospital say the pension plan is underfunded by $1.2 billion. Dignity Health is the fifth largest provider of healthcare in the country, employing more than 60,000 people. It formed from the merger of two Catholic hospital systems in California in 1986. Advocate Healthcare Network is affiliated with the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America and the United Church of Christ. It employs about 30,000 people at 12 hospitals and more than 250 inpatient and outpatient healthcare sites in Illinois. St. Peter's is owned by the Roman Catholic Diocese of Matuchin, New Jersey, and runs a hospital and other healthcare facilities employing more than 2,800 people. People are being urged to check their new fivers after engraved banknotes worth as much as £50,000 were circulated in a Willy Wonka-style golden ticket giveaway. Tiny portraits of Jane Austen have been added to four of the new £5 notes by talented micro-engraver Graham Short. The 70-year-old painstakingly carved tiny 5mm portraits of the novelist onto the polymer cash next to the images of Sir Winston Churchill and Big Ben. Classic quotes from Emma, Pride and Prejudice and Mansfield Park have also been engraved onto the Bank of England notes, which went into circulation last weekend. The outline of the golden engraving is visible to the naked eye, but a microscope will be needed to see it properly. Art experts are estimating that the four fivers could be worth up to £50,000 after collectors forked out thousands to buy notes with unusual serial numbers. Mr. Short is most famous for engraving the words of the Lord's Prayer onto the head of a pin, and his last work, a portrait of the Queen, engraved on a speck of gold inside the eye of a needle, sold for £100,000. Mr. Short from Northfield in Birmingham said, "I'm always looking to do something different. When I saw the new £5 note, I thought, wouldn't it be good if I could engrave something on it? I don't know what at first, but then I found out that next year is going to be the 200th anniversary of Jane Austen's death, and her image is also going to be on the new £10 note, which is coming out next year, so it ties in quite nicely with that." The beauty of this is that in the right light you can't see the engraving at all, but when you turn the note and the light comes in at a different angle, it appears. I like to call it invisible engraving. I have no idea how much they will be worth if people try to sell them, but previous pieces I've worked on have been insured for more than £50,000. If somebody finds one, I hope that maybe they put it on eBay. If they can get some extra money for Christmas, I'll be thrilled. Mr. Short has been engraving for more than half a century after starting an apprenticeship when he left school at the age of 15. He works at night when traffic vibrations are lower and uses a stethoscope to monitor his heart and engraves between beats. Artist Tony Huggins-Haig, who has staged regular exhibitions by Short at his gallery in Kelso, Scotland, believes finding one of the special fibres could make someone rich. He said, "It's a bit like the Willy Wonka golden tickets. People will soon find themselves in possession of these very different notes, but only if they look very closely." My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.
On your PC, tablet, mobile phone and internet radio receiver, this is Lutheran Radio UK.